Welcome to Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped, and yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. This is Dreamland. Another Sunday night, Dreamland on the air. Good evening, everybody. There is breaking news. There has been a powerful earthquake. It struck Russia's Kuril Islands north of Japan today. Japan's Kyoto news agency quoted Russia's emergency ministry as confirming no casualties or damage. Officials at our National Earthquake Center say the quake registered 8.0 on the Richter scale, which would make it, quote, a major seismic event outstripping all but a handful of all of history's most damaging quakes, end quote. That's from Reuters about 1 hour ago. From Mike in Montana, one of many, many faxes of those who have been following quakes, Mike says it appears to be real this week. CNN Headline News just reported an 8.0 quake in the Kuril Islands chain north of Japan. He says this could well be the first quake in Gordon Michael Scallion's current window, which began December 1st. And that is true, I believe, regarding the window. And it is prophetic, indeed, that we would have that news. The main guest on Dreamland tonight is going to be Moira Timms. She's in Eugene, Oregon. And she's written a book called Beyond Prophecies and Predictions, Everyone's Guide to the Coming Changes. So, talk about timely. This is certainly timely. In a moment, coming up, Linda Howe. She has several very interesting reports for us. I've got a very quick note. We are on the very last hours of my book sale. And those of you that want an autographed version of my book, The Art of Talk, literally in the last hours, I think it ends end of show December 4th. That is tomorrow. So if you would like an autographed copy, and I want to stress this because we're getting down to the end of it, the book is great whether you have an autographed copy or not. And you're thinking the best gift you could ever buy anybody who's into talk radio. It's real talk. There's no contest. Now, this is an AM/FM radio that has a cassette deck on board. It stands tall. It's about 12 inches tall. It's got an LCD a digital readout. It's got a timer. It's got a cassette deck that records at 1/4 speed. Now, what that means is you can take a 90-minute cassette, and on just one side of it, you can get 3 hours. Moreover, you can set a timer. So, obviously, it records Dreamland or any other show, and you don't miss it. Now, through tomorrow, Bob Crane will throw in a super high-quality 100-minute tape, which means in excess, obviously, of 3 hours, free of charge. So Christmas, real talk, talk radio, they all go together. $139.95 includes getting it right to your door, includes shipping and handling. Call Bob Crane in the morning before they're gone at 1-800-522-8863. 1-800-522-8863. Now to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and our Linda Howe. And let's see, I'm always trying to figure out how I should introduce you. Investigative reporter.
Yes.
You are, right?
Yes. Television producer.
Television producer, Emmy Award winning at that. And I would say the nation's, I wonder if I could say the nation's leading investigator into crop circles and animal mutilations.
Well, maybe one of them. The problem is that these phenomena are so wide-ranging and complex that I don't think any one of us have got a handle on anything. We're all struggling to try to understand what is happening. So I have colleagues out there that join me in my efforts, but I certainly would say that the pursuit of truth in this complex field has begun to dominate my professional life.
That would be a good understatement, dominate your professional life, yes. And certainly you'd be leading the pack. I think of you that way, Linda. You spend so much time on it.
Okay.
I know of nobody else that does the kind of work you do. I mean, there are, obviously, I don't want to leave anybody out. There are other people doing the work, but it seems to me you're at the head of the pack.
Well, thanks. I'm trying, and I really feel that Dreamland is an important connection to the world, because hearing from people about their eyewitnesses' accounts, which we can report and then encourage other people to report back, I think, Art, is forming a kind of strong network here. And I'm really grateful that I can make these reports each Sunday on Dreamland. And one of the updates that I wanted to bring to our listeners was that last Sunday I interviewed author Jim Mars about his latest investigations beyond the JFK assassination into remote viewing research by the United States government. 2 days later, Nightline, Associated Press, all over the place, there were stories, and the Associated Press story I thought was especially apropos. It began, for 20 years, the United States has secretly used psychics in attempts to hunt down Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, to find plutonium in North Korea, and to help drug enforcement agencies, unquote. This statement was confirmed by the Central Intelligence Agency, which said the remote viewing research was codenamed Stargate, which is an interesting code name to begin with.
It sure is.
And that as recently as July 1995, this summer, at least three remote viewers continued to work out of Fort Meade, Maryland, which is usually associated with the location of the National Security Agency and the Defense Intelligence Agency. According to university professors Ray Hyman, a psychologist at the University of Oregon, and Jessica Utes, a statistician at the University of California in Davis, the remote viewing study reported mixed success with an accuracy rate of about 15%. Both researchers agreed that the remote viewers were not reliable enough to be used alone, but might be helpful in combination with other intelligence gathering operations. Professor Jessica Utes said the statistical results were promising enough that research should continue. She said, quote, "I would like to see funding in the open science world. I think that we are at the point that something needs to be explained." And I think this is one of the things we've all been hoping is that the broader general academic world would begin to focus attention on areas that some of us know have some kind of a reality here. But up until these recent times, the general university population has tended to ignore what we would call some of the more psychic or phenomena of the unseen.
I know, Linda. Do you think it's getting any easier out there? I'll tell you this, as a talk show host, dealing with this kind of stuff all the time, and I do on this show and my regular show, I take a lot of hits. There are a lot of less than open-minded people out there who like to come after me because I investigate this sort of thing. Now, obviously, when it begins to break into the Nightline, when we begin to get prophecy fulfillment, when we begin to get films like the one of the Socorro question mark dissection, that sort of thing.
No one has proved to be false yet, and even Time and Newsweek acknowledge that.
I heard a report from somebody who called up again, taking a shot at me the other night on some of their show, and said, you know, that was what's called a blood knife. That it was a knife that produces blood, he said, and so Art Bell's full of baloney.
That's not what medical people say watching that.
I know.
So, all of us who are trying to deal in this, we'll call it the areas that are not accepted in the general social paradigm, we all are like fish swimming upstream to a certain extent, but consider that around the world, eyewitness reports have been going on for decades, maybe even centuries. And right now, The very past 2 weeks, there are more triangles in the skies acting extremely oddly, defying what we would consider to be terrestrial physics. Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, he called me and he told me that since November 17th, he has received several reports from Greensboro, North Carolina, all the way to Allentown, Pennsylvania, about huge, silent, lighted triangles. One of the eyewitnesses, Kathy Schreck from Wind Gap, Pennsylvania, about an hour from where I am right now, told me that she pulled her car over to the side of the road around 10:15 p.m. Friday, November 17th, because she wanted to get a better look at a strange light in the sky that was only about 50 feet above her car. She could see what looked like solid gray-black metal in the shape of a huge triangle hovering completely silently without any motion at all. She estimated that there were 25 or 30 round white lights, she said, like car headlights on the bottom. She watched for 5 to 10 minutes, not wanting to take her eyes off the triangle, and then it suddenly took off and became a pinpoint of light in the distance. She was so unnerved by the experience that she called the local airport and was referred to the Seattle UFO Reporting Center. Peter Davenport there is trying to gather as many reports as possible, check them with airports and experts, and correlate sighting data. And for those listening, I'll just give the 24-hour hotline number in Seattle, because it is a good place to network in terms of reports for correlation. And that is area code 206-722-3000. The 24-hour hotline number in Seattle is area code 206-722-3000. Now, strange lights have also been reported in Puerto Rico, along with a continuing rash of strange animal deaths that have local authorities now very concerned. Less than 1 week ago, on Tuesday, November 28th, a cow was found dying on the farm of a Puerto Rico district senator near Agua Buenos, about 45 minutes southwest of San Juan. The mayor of Agua Buenos called El Vocero newspaper photographer Eddie Deesconde to go and take photographs. Eddie has been photographing these unusual animal deaths for the past 2 months throughout the island, and he talked to me today about the Agua Buenos and other cases and described the unknown creature called chupacabras, or the goat sucker, that residents in Puerto Rico have been reporting and even school children have been drawing. And here is Eddie Deese.
And the mayor called me and says, Eddie, I need to see you because I have a cow that's still alive and has two holes where this creature has bitten and sucked out half of the blood of this big, huge cow. We're talking about a cow that is pregnant. She had a calf, and she was, you know, it was still alive when I got there around 11:30 at midnight, you know. When I got there, she was still alive, and the cow had two holes for at least an inch and an inch and a half, 2 inches of separation, and they looked like they were punch, ice pick punch, mm-hmm. And it was completely clean.
The area, and this was on the side of the cow's neck?
That is correct.
And were any other parts of the tissue, the ears, the eyes, jaw,
They were not attacked, no way.
Nothing?
It was no other way. The only thing that we had on the cow, that she was in pain, she was actually crying out that in pain, and I opened up her eyes were completely almost vanished, they were completely back.
What did the senator who owned this cow, what did he say?
He didn't really actually wanted to us to, you know, investigate more with details, but what happened is that the mayor of that town of Aguas Buenas, he actually wanted to make a big investigation. He wanted the Senate to start putting pressure that the government should start investigating more details of all these kinds of animals that have been attacked.
If I understand correctly, it has affected cats, goats, sheep, cattle, horses, chickens. this mark, these two puncture holes in the side of the neck, has that been reported in every case?
Everything that has been reported to the police, it's been exactly the same way. Everybody's been attacked the same way. I mean, and that they've been attacked by sort of an animal that nobody knows. That's the only thing that we have up to now.
Is that some people are reporting this strange creature with the spines running from the head down the back and with these large red eyes. And
okay. You know, looking at a bullfrog, the way the back of a bullfrog with the stuff like that.
Right.
This is the kind of creature we're talking about that people have seen. They describe this kind of material that this animal is sort of made out of.
Reminds them of a frog.
It could be a giant frog, a flying giant frog with sort of mixed with maybe a monkey or something. It's got to be something that was created. It could be in a laboratory or something. It's something that. Very strange. And this, everybody describes the same kind of lumpy type, big claws, big eyes. We had two weeks ago, we had a whole hen house that lost 79 chickens and one shot deal one night. They lost the whole 79 chickens.
Did the chickens have the same holes?
Oh, yes, they did have it. They did have them in between their wings. They had them in between their wings. The thing is that we can't understand that it's very strange that this animal attacks different kinds of animals by bunch, and just all at one time. They collapse 80 or maybe oh they collapse 79 chickens all at one time. They attacked it. They sucked their blood out and they killed them. And nobody knows how that, you know, because to catch one chicken, it's very hard. To kill one, and it's very hard. You know, to kill five or six at the same time, it's very hard. But, you know, 79 chickens at one time, it's very difficult. And this is why we are still investigating where all these kinds of different people, different part of the island are calling us and letting us know that they last night they killed their cow, they killed their horse. They killed four rabbits the other night. Last night they had out in Carolina, somebody killed two rabbits. The other night they killed four chickens.
And they all have these puncture holes.
Yes, they did. And they were all domestic animals. They were in their cages. They were not out in the street or nothing like that. Some of them are out on the street, but they had, there were cycle fence maybe around it. It was very strange. How could somebody just jump over the fence without touching the fence, just jump over, kill all these animals, and different part of the island.
And Art Eddie B says that the number of animals killed in the last 2 months is estimated now to be several hundred. And it's reminding me and others there in the media world of the famous vampire of Moca, which terrorized Puerto Rico in the 1970s.
Linda, we are woefully short on time here, but I was going to say the same word, vampire. Two marks and blood gone sounds vampirish to me.
Well, what's interesting is, just very briefly, these aren't the classic mutilations that I usually would report about. But this is happening in Puerto Rico at the same time that classic animal mutilations are being reported right around us in southern Oklahoma, Missouri, southern Colorado, Susanville, California, northern Ireland, Saskatchewan, Canada. There seems to be a rash of them right now.
Right. All right. We've got to scoot, so give us your info quick.
Okay, thanks. I would like to give my fax number is area code 215-491-9842. My address is Linda Howe at Post Office Box 538 in Huntingdon Valley, Pennsylvania, zip code 19006, and the toll-free number for information about my books and documentaries is 800-707-9993. Again, that's 800-707-9993. 9993, and on that toll-free number, people can leave phone numbers for me to call back also if they do have something to report.
Linda, I've got a scoot. Thanks a million.
And thank you, Art.
Take care. That, of course, is Linda Howe. And in a moment, Moira Timms. Copies of Moira Timms' book. What does the future hold for us as we approach the new century? Are we on the brink of enlightenment or the eve of destruction? Prophets from Nostradamus to Edgar Cayce have made dramatic predictions about the period leading up to the year 2012. Predictions ranging from a cataclysmic shifting of the Earth's poles to the dawning of a new order of the ages. Many have seen the current decade as a time for purification, a healing crisis that will either lead to an entirely new phase of evolution or our annihilation. The outcome, uncertain. This timely and important book synthesizes the major world prophecies, including those of the Hopi, the Mayans, Babylonians, the Bible, Nostradamus, Edgar Cayce, and the Great Pyramid, into a compelling, unified theory with an inescapable message: the choices we collectively make today create our tomorrow. Positive changes in the mass consciousness and constructive actions can modify our planetary karma and avert catastrophe. Corroborated throughout scientific, seismological, and environmental documentation, beyond prophecies and predictions, issues an urgent call to action that we cannot afford to ignore. So, a very important and timely interview coming up. Moira Timms, M.S., is the author of the best-selling Beyond Prophecies and Predictions, Random House book, by the way, Prophecies and Predictions, and The 6 o'clock Bus. Find out about that. She is a researcher and an archaic futurist, that's interesting, specializing in the beginnings and endings of historical cycles. Her work blends Egyptian mysteries, prophecy, mythology, and science. As we approach the turn of the century, Moira's ability to synthesize diverse aspects into the big picture is a gift to empower your highest purpose. And here from Eugene, Oregon, she is. Hi, Moira.
Hello, Art.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I was sorry to hear that news about the earthquake. That's really very startling.
Well, the 8.0 was startling. If the report of the 8.2 should be true, that's really startling.
Was this both, were both of these events on CNN?
Well, the facts, yes, to answer your first question, the first event I personally saw on CNN, the 8.0 earthquake. The second facts arrived literally 5 minutes ago, and I have no way of confirming it.
Yes, because sometimes there's different earthquake centers all over the world that do monitor these things on the Richter scale, and so many times the same event will get reported from various sources, but with a slightly different Richter number.
It is true, and we can hope that might be true in this case, Moira, because what would it generally mean? I know you're not a seismologist, but to have an 8.0 earthquake, which is very unusual to begin with, followed within hours, literally, by an 8.2, if that were true, what would that say?
It would say things are getting very intense around the Ring of Fire. The information that I received from the National Earthquake Information Service in Golden, Colorado, is that what is normal in any given year, Art, is that on an average there's one great quake, and that means 8.0 plus, you know?
Right.
There would be 18 major quakes, which would be between 7 and 7.9. And so you see there's a very fine line between having a bunch of major ones at 7.9 and a great one at 8. It's only 1 point difference. Anyway, you can have 120 strong ones, 6.5 plus, and then about a total on the average of earthquakes altogether. And so the Ring of Fire is the most seismically active area in the whole world, and certainly around Japan. When you look at the deep ocean trenches on some of the Navy maps, I'm looking at one right now.
Yes.
You see that there's just a labyrinth underneath the ocean depths of trenches and core spreading, tectonic plate ruptures, all of this kind of thing. and it's like a freeway map. So I'm looking at this particular trench here. It's the Kuril Trench. It's a very straight area that goes across the northwest from just above Japan, where Hokkaido is, the northern part of the island chain.
Yes,
there,
of course, uh-huh.
To the Kamchatka Peninsula, and then it goes across to Alaska. So this is just slightly northwest of the major area where Edgar Cayce said would be the most turmoil, and to watch that area for changes. So
well,
it's all part of the scheme of things, and we can't say we're surprised, really, although, you know, the idea of loss of life is always upsetting.
Well, it is. Fortunately, of course, this is an area where there is not a lot of life to begin with. The problem is that it may be, as one of my factors suggested, the beginning of Gordon Michael Scallion's predicted four-quake scenario in the eight-point range. Now, I understand before the announcement of the quake today and earlier today, you spoke with Gordon Michael Scallion?
I spoke to him 2 days ago.
2 days ago?
Yes. He
well,
didn't mention anything about earthquakes.
Oh, he did not?
No.
Is there anything he did mention that would be relevant that you'd like to pass along?
Well, I was going to mention it later in the show when it kind of came up organically.
Okay.
Because he's talking about something quite different as far as the major focus for next year. So I'll just leave that for later on.
All right.
It's not quite related to this.
All right. Anyway, your work has been pretty wide-ranging, hasn't it? In other words, you looked at almost all prophecy you've been able to look at. And have you found a commonality between the prophets, between what science you've looked at, the Hopi, the Mayan prophecy, the Babylonian, all of them, is there any commonality?
Oh, yes, yes. Really, the thing that is most amazing, and I guess it's not really news right now, but it was news when it was discovered, was that it didn't matter what prophecy had been issued when and where and to whom. Basically, the major prophecies were saying the same things. They were just different historical times, different cultural contexts, you know. And so the prophecies that I examined are not necessarily the predictions that somebody's aunt in Boise, Idaho would make, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But more like the authentic traditional prophecies from important world cultures that have had these, you know, guidelines since the year dot. And so when I hear an individual making a prediction, I don't pay as much attention as something that is consistent with what the ancient people said. So in talking of the similarities, I think it would be concise to say that all of them said there would come a time and there'd be an event that would kick off a whole prophecy cycle. And after that, there would be a number of things that would happen, the kind of things we're seeing happen in the world right now. And then there would be a culmination of this cycle, and after that, there would be a big event, and they didn't spell out exactly what that was, but they were, you know, allusions to what it might be in New World Age, the end of the world, you know, this kind of thing?
Yes.
So when you look at the historical record, for instance, I could share with you that the Hopi, they had said there would come a time in the future when a gourd of ashes would be dropped from the sky, and it would burn everything, and it would kill the fish in the ocean, and nothing would live or grow in the area where it fell. So when they saw the atomic bomb being dropped at the beginning of, you know, the end of the war, they thought, uh-oh, and this seemed very significant to them. Well, in the Bible, 2,000 years ago, Jesus was on the Mount of Olives with his disciples, and they were saying, gosh, you know, and he was telling them about the things that were to come, but it never sounded like cheerful stuff, you see. So they said, well, what would be some of the signs of your return and all of these things coming to pass? And so what Jesus is recorded saying in the Gospels is, when the powers of heaven are shaken, etc., etc., that will be the sign of these things about to occur. So if you look, I mean, the deeper you can look into these things and examine what seems to be obvious, the deeper you can penetrate the real mystery of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the translation from the Greek, the powers of heaven, heaven is Uranus in Greek, but that's the same root word as uranium, as Uranus, the planet. You could equally well translate it as when the powers of uranium are shaken, you see.
Which would point toward some sort of nuclear...
So that could be the atomic bomb, you know,
yes.
an old prototype, you know, that kind of thing. And in fact, even when the atomic bomb was dropped, the code name was Baby Jesus, or Little Boy. There's variations as to what it was actually called.
It was Little Boy and Fat
reported.
Man.
Mm-hmm. And so anyway, the other thing that I'm thinking of that is similar is in the Great Pyramid. Now, there's a little bit of misunderstanding about the Great Pyramid. You do not see prophecies inscribed in there, but there's a chronological timeline that's been gone over with a fine-tooth comb by all kinds of researchers and people, and so it's beyond a doubt that there is this timeline. And so when you get up into the uppermost chamber, it's been progressing like a month, an inch for a month, and then it changes at a certain point. Anyway, the midpoint of the king's chamber translates out to the date of 1945 when the first atomic testing was done.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, you know, when you come up against the wall, it's 1953. And so there is a sense that by 1953 the planetary karma had been set by that time. A lot of the Mayan calendric things cite 1983 as a key year in the world history.
When you say set, do you mean that whatever, in other words, whatever we're going to go on to, we are going to go on to. There is no turning back. The direction at that point is clear. Is that what you mean by...
The course has been set.
Yeah, so...
And so, obviously, there is existential value in struggle, as you know, Jean-Paul Sartre said. You do what you have to do regardless.
Well, of course, but the back of your book, Moira, seems to suggest that mankind can still avert with the proper kind of karmic transmission what is to come, and you are now suggesting that may not be the case.
No, I could expound on that a little more. I would just say that there are certain things that are cyclical, and they're in the scheme of things, and the intensity really depends on how well we deal with the crisis. So I think that when I speak about 1953 as like a certain karma being set, I think there's no chance to avert the whole thing at that point, but actions and expectations certainly influence outcomes. So anything we do between that, anything we have done since that point, and what we continue to do between now and say the year 2000 or 2012, when this cycle is predicted to end, that will lessen or aggravate, you know, the final outcome.
I see. All right, hold on a moment, Moira. We'll be right back to you. I don't know. To me, the line I've used again and again is mankind's little red light has come on, the one that says point of no return. In a moment, more of Moira Timms. Now back to Moira Timms. Moira, we have a very bad phone connection for some reason. Your audio is very muffled and a little difficult to understand. I don't know why that is.
Oh, dear, and I'm really talking loud so that I feel like I'm sort of not being...
Yeah, we'll sort of bear with it for now. Hopefully it'll be okay. At any rate, Moira, to continue, I have said this. I've looked at mankind sociologically because I do the news. You know, I see the news every day. I've got to study the news for what I do. And I have seen a steady, not just a decline, Moira, but an acceleration of decline in social behavior, in our economic world, in our political world. We're about to send 35,000 U.S. troops over to what I consider to be hell. And as a general observer, I've called it the quickening. Events appeared to be accelerating.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, Art, absolutely. You know, what logic follows emotion, and like when you're feeling down or you happen to read the newspaper or the commercial journals, there's any amount of evidence why we're all going to hell, you see, why it's all so terrible. And this is true. This is real stuff. There's no questioning about that. On the other hand, when you're feeling wonderful and you might not read these sources, mm-hmm. or you just appreciate the wonderfulness of the day, or you hear other things that are quite uplifting and inspiring on an entirely different level, then you say, well, there is hope, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And so what I'm feeling from all of this is either viewpoint can be justified. It is a fact, however, that because we rely on the news and the newspapers and commercial print media for our information, that news is by definition negative, catastrophic stuff. So you're never going to find how things are improving by reading those sources. You will simply reinforce your fears and your despair.
It's true.
And you don't want to have your head in the ground, but you need to be realistic, so you do have to check and see what's happening in the world. But I think what I'm suggesting is that really it's wonderful and terrible all at the same time. And a lot of it is where we put our attention. I mean, here in the United States, everybody has their problems, but we don't have the problems that they have in Bosnia or many other parts of this, in other third world countries. So everything is sort of relative, and I think personal action is required so that, you know, the good of one becomes the good of all.
Well, personal action on what level?
Excuse me?
Personal action, Moira, on what level? In other words,
any level that draws your interest and your passion, I would think. In the back of my book, for instance, I have a section, I'm calling it the 12-step program to personal and planetary health, and I'm listing areas where people can plug in and make a difference. I think that individuals tend to feel disempowered, you see. They say, well, what can I do? I'm just an individual. Forces are in motion. The government's, you know, not serving us the way it should. All of this and all this conspiracy stuff.
All right, Moira.
You feel hopeless.
Moira, hold on a moment. We're at the top of the hour. Relax. We'll be back to you, all right? Moira Timms is my guest from an area near Dreamland. This is Dreamland.